Welcome back to Beyond the Uniform. I'm Justin Asiri, and each week I interview military veterans about their civilian career. Today's episode number 81 with Doug Nordman.
In that 14 years of financial independence that I've enjoyed since retirement, you can relax, you can figure out what's really important to you, and you can focus on that. And so I do maybe perhaps look mellow and look free and easy and having a good lifestyle. And some of that is because I've been able to do whatever I want all day for the last 14 years or so. But it also means that you have the chance to design the lifestyle you want, and you really are responsible for your own entertainment.
This is one of those rare interviews I do that I would recommend to every single listener. Whether you're on active duty or have been out for 20 years, this is an episode for you. The top two reasons to listen to this episode are, number one, financial freedom. Doug retired from the military just after he was 40 years old and hasn't worked a day since then. At first, he and his wife didn't even realize they had achieved financial independence. Since he retired, Doug has helped countless others achieve financial independence, and he talks about it in a very open and transparent way that I know you'll find achievable and accessible. Number two, tactics. Doug talks about the fog of work and how easy it is for each of us to get caught up in to-do lists and the daily grind. He talks about taking time away from work to gather one's bearings, but also how you can use 20 minutes a day to get perspective and move towards your goals. As always, at beyondtheuniform.io, you'll find a list of different resources as well as show notes for today's episode. Doug mentions a lot of great things that you can use today to move towards financial independence, and you'll find them all listed there. So with that, let's dive in to my interview with fellow submariner Doug Nordman. Joining me today in Honolulu, Hawaii is Doug Nordman. Doug, welcome to Beyond the Uniform.
Thanks, Justin. I've enjoyed listening to all the episodes so far.
Awesome. Well, I wanted to give listeners a quick background on Doug. He is an early retiree who has found financial independence far before he thought it was possible, and he's the author of The Military Guide to Financial Independence and Retirement. It's a book where all of the royalties are donated towards military charities. He started out at the Naval Academy, after which he served on submarines for 20 years. Since retiring from the Navy, Doug has worked to help other veterans reach financial independence for free. And Doug's spouse is a Naval Reserve retiree, and his daughter is about to start her second Surface Warfare Officer Sea Tour as a junior officer on the USS Gerald R. Ford. Doug holds a Master's in Engineering, Science, Computers, Weapons Engineering from the Naval Postgraduate School. So, Doug, to start off, I always like to ask, at what point did you know you were going to leave the military, and how did you approach that decision?
Well, I knew that about the 15-year point, I was definitely going to retire from the military, but I'd been getting ready to get out of the Navy ever since I came up on the end of my first obligation. You know, when I got to that 4-year point and started looking at the end of the 5-year obligation, I called up Lucas Associates back then. That's what they were called, to do some headhunter work with them and think about getting out. And I kept that up. I took it one obligation at a time all the way up until the point where it became clear that it was smart for me to stay on active duty to 20.
And you talked about how you were slow to realize that you and your wife had achieved financial independence. Could you share more about how you realized this, and if you're open to it, what sort of numbers that looked like?
Oh, yeah. I tell as many people about this as I can, because many military service members and families just don't realize how close they can get to financial independence while they're on active duty, even without a military pension. And in our case, this was back in the 1980s and 1990s, so we were using stone tablets and styluses and abacuses to figure out if we'd saved enough money for financial independence. The reality is that the books that made a big difference in my life weren't published until the 90s. One of them that came out in 1992 was Your Money or Your Life, which talked about using your life energy to reach financial independence and whether your spending was aligned with the things that you valued in your life. And then Millionaire Next Door came out in 1996, which made another huge impression on me from a perspective of saving for financial independence. So we began to realize from reading those books that we would be able to reach financial independence and started looking at the numbers. Back in the 1990s, the tools for deciding whether you were financially independent were fairly primitive, but there were some tools there. And the thumb rule back then is the same as it is today. The 4% safe withdrawal rate seemed to be the most conservative and the most achievable goal. We looked at that, and we reached that in the late 1990s. By then, our investments, our personal savings and investments in the stock market and in mutual funds, had reached just under $1 million. And we still are carrying some mortgage debt on our residences. So we had a net of about $650,000. Plus, we realized my military pension in a couple of years would take care of that. And it was the combination of our savings and investments and knowing that I have a military pension to paper over any flaws or cracks or surprises in the whole process and in the calculations. Plus, I'm 41 years old. I knew that once I'd left the military and started my retirement on my pension, that if things didn't work out, that I'd probably be able to get some kind of a job. And 14 years later, I never really did go for that job. But 14 years later, I tell people that I see opportunities everywhere. And you've probably heard the same from your other people that you've had on the podcast, is that they didn't realize how many opportunities there were until they were actually out of the military and able to get a good look around.
You know, so many questions come up when you're saying this, but I guess the first one is, and I could just throw this on the listeners and say, for listeners who don't know about the 4% withdrawal rate, but I actually am ignorant on that. So could you talk about what do you mean by reaching a 4% withdrawal rate?
More research back in the 90s was done by a guy named Bengen, a financial analyst, who decided, looking back at the last roughly 75 to 100 years of stock market returns and how people's portfolios had done and some computer study, he said that roughly the withdrawal rate of your assets was about 4%. What he meant was you could retire, and on the first day you retired to financial independence, you'd withdraw 4% of your portfolio. And then every year that you were in retirement, you would continue to withdraw the same amount from that portfolio with an adjustment for inflation. So you started at 4%, you adjusted that for inflation every year. The odds of your portfolio surviving for about 30 years were pretty good, up in the 90 to 95% range. That was the first time anybody had been able to make that kind of bold statement that you'd be able to get a portfolio to survive for what back then was considered a traditional retirement in your 60s for 30 years. That's why they picked that original number for 30 years. Then in 1998, three guys at Trinity University came up with what was called the Trinity Study. And people that have been sitting around talking about financial independence for a few years have run across this information. And it's also on a lot of popular forums and websites. And the Trinity Study pretty much confirmed what Bengen had come up with in 1994, that 4% would work. Today, we have a much more nuanced perception on the 4% rule. People have focused very diligently on what works and what doesn't in the 4% rule. And there are a number of flaws with the ability to study and simulate and examine that. I choose to focus on the fact that if you're in the military and you have a military pension, then any mistake you make with the 4% rule or anything the stock market does to you, your military pension is an inflation-adjusted annuity that will take care of you and keep the worst from happening and then guarantee your survival of your portfolio and of your financial independence. And it turns out that everybody needs some sort of annuitized income during their lives. And it might be as simple as Social Security at age 65. It might be a military pension. It might be a bridge career, 401k, or a pension from there. Or it might be just your own savings. And in the time that I've talked with readers of the Military Guide, I've seen people do it all different ways. The big emphasis on a 4% safe withdrawal rate is that the computer studies don't have all the details on the computer. You can't necessarily simulate every aspect of the 4% safe withdrawal rate. However, what we can do in financial independence is we can vary our spending, work a little part-time, and do a number of other tactics to make sure that if a big bear market comes up, that the 4% safe withdrawal rate and your portfolio will still survive. And since the 14 years that I've been retired from the Navy, we've gone through two impressive recessions, and we've done just fine.
I love that thought of the military pension providing that buffer zone for uncertainty. And if I'm understanding this correctly, so 4%, you had talked about, you know, $1 million of assets. So basically trying to arrange your life so that your expenses are below $40,000 a year. Is that about right?
That's right. And okay. We knew that if we had a little more spending above that, that my military pension would cover that. But we went into financial independence one day realizing, gosh, we've got more investment income coming in than our spending was last year. Is this really right, or is this an anomaly? And we were able to look it up and realize and research that, yes, we'd be able to do this.
I just appreciate your transparency in this. I feel like, you know, in the military, finances are so open. Everyone knows what everyone else makes. And then somehow in that transition to civilian life, that's definitely lost and it becomes this taboo topic again. And I just appreciate your willingness to share those numbers because, you know, and it sounds like from your story, it was a surprise that you were financially independent and you didn't even realize it. And so it's incredible to see how you're helping other people realize, like, hey, you can continue to work if you want, but you might not, it might not be a necessary burden. It could be a choice rather than an obligation.
Exactly. I stayed till retirement, and a large part of that was out of fear of the unknown and my concern that I wouldn't be able to get a real job when I got out. You've probably heard that theme a few times before mm-hmm. in this podcast. Mm-hmm. The other issue was making sure that I wasn't making a mistake here. Back then, the tools were relatively primitive, and I didn't want to miss something and find out that I'd made a horrible mistake. But today, I want my readers to understand that it's based on a high savings rate. You can reach financial independence if you have an aggressive high savings rate, and you can do it without the military pension, and you don't even need 20 years to do it. It's all based on a high savings rate, and there's plenty of flexibility. So the awareness, the realization that freedom is within grasp is something that helps a lot with the military, you know, during your fifth deployment or when your family is separated from you again, knowing that you can reach financial independence or leave active duty for the reserves. I tell people that if they're feeling challenged and fulfilled on active duty, then stay on active duty as long as you're enjoying it. But when the fun stops, be ready to go to the reserves or the National Guard and make sure you've been saving aggressively for your financial independence so that you have those choices.
I love, you know, just the photos of I see of you online surfing and just the impression I get from your background is you just seem like a very free, independent person. And what I really admire is so much in my own life and just in our surroundings for everyone seems to be about always achieving more, always achievement defined only by income and by money. And what it seems like you've constructed a life where you're able to do whatever you want, whatever energizes you and whatever fulfills you, rather than just driving after one single numeric of fulfillment and achievement, which is salary or paycheck.
Well, you know us nuclear trained submariners are pretty happy-go-lucky, seat of the pants, just take each day as it comes kind of guys. And the reality is that I still am very hyper-competitive, and I get up every morning wanting to have, you know, the best early retirement anyone has ever had ever in the history of the world. But it also, surfing is a metaphor for what happens in financial independence and giving you a choice on how you want to spend the rest of your life. And I found on the day I retired when I took surfing lessons with my family, I found that I'd never really understood surfing and what the whole culture and lifestyle was about. So that's made a big difference. You can also, in that 14 years of financial independence that I've enjoyed since retirement, you can relax, you can figure out what's really important to you, and you can focus on that. And so I do maybe perhaps look mellow and look free and easy and having a good lifestyle. And some of that is because I've been able to do whatever I want all day for the last 14 years or so. But it also means that you have the chance to design the lifestyle you want, and you really are responsible for your own entertainment. If you're not happy in financial independence and early retirement, then you need to take another look at what you're doing and figure out how to fix it.
I think that's so great. What does a day in your life look like?
I people think this is a joke, but I literally start every morning with the surf forecast just to make sure that I know what's going on in the weather out there. And if the surf is up and if it's really good, then I'm going surfing if I can. So I end up going surfing two or three times a week. I really prefer to go out there at dawn. Dawn patrol is when the wave conditions are generally the cleanest and the wind is the least. And so you can go out there and have a good surf session for a couple hours and you still have the whole day in front of you. Other things I do if the surf forecast isn't quite what I expected, or I went surfing yesterday and I don't want to do 2 days in a row, some reason like that, the next thing I'll do is I'll write. I found out in retirement that I enjoy to write, and I write every day at something. It isn't that I don't write, it's that I have trouble focusing on writing the right thing. So I'll be answering emails or writing a blog post or working on a chapter of the second book that I'm writing. and I'll just continue that for about 20 minutes, but I'll get into it. Maybe it'll be an hour. I spend a lot of time online answering questions for people. I'm active on a number of different internet forums and Facebook groups and also blog comments. And so I do get questions every day. I answer every reader question. It may take me 2 or 3 days, but I will do the research and answer questions. Then there's the lifestyle that everybody leads. We were parenting our daughter for about 10 years, the first 10 years of our financial independence. There's always yard work, chores, home improvement, maintenance, what we refer to around this house as functional fitness, stuff you're going to do anyway for exercise, so you might as well work on the house or the yard. And there's plenty of time in every day for me to enjoy myself with reading. Since our daughter has graduated from college and started her own career, we've enjoyed a lot of slow travel over the last couple of years. And by slow travel, I mean we've been able to go somewhere and rent an apartment or live with our daughter at her house, wherever she's stationed, and enjoy exploring the local area, the community, and spend a couple of weeks or even a couple of months there living like locals. We spent almost 5 months of each of the last 2 years in that slow travel lifestyle. And as a military retiree, we can also take military space available flights to wherever we want to go. So you start watching what's available in the space available terminal, or you make reservations during the off-peak season on a commercial airline, and you go somewhere and enjoy life for a couple of months. I've found out that I really enjoy that slow travel lifestyle so much better than trying to cram everything into a week of activity or a resort or a vacation to a destination.
I mean, man, one thing that just really resonates with me as you talk about this is, and another reason I appreciate your candor, is that nothing you're describing is out of reach for anyone listening. Like it seems like you're describing simple changes of just very simple changes, even with exercise, of incorporating that into accomplishing a task around the house, or, you know, just choosing flight times that are a little bit more affordable. It seems like more than anything else, it's all mental shifts rather than any sort of dramatic life shift.
That's a good way to say it. It's not so much that you sit down and redesign your life as much as that you realize that you have enough time now to focus on the things that are important to you. If you feel like you're wasting money on your insurance bills, for example, you can go and do a complete review of all your insurance and figure out exactly what coverage you want and what companies you want to get it from, and you'll probably end up saving money. If you realize that cooking healthy food is important to you, you have the chance to completely redesign the menu that you eat at home and the food you buy and the way you prepare it. It's more about figuring out what's important to you, what you're going to do all day, and then designing your life around that, around the things that you enjoy. And if you don't like it, then go ahead and try something else. You don't have to find the certain routine or the lifestyle that you're going to lead the minute you retire and then spend the next 50 years of your life living that routine. Everything's renegotiable. And if you wake up one morning and things aren't going the way you want, you have the chance to take a few thoughtful changes to your life and see what else you'd like to do. And I do talk in the books and the website about tools to help you figure out what you want to do. The biggest problem, you and I have talked a little bit about this, is if you're working, it's very hard to pull your head out of your inbox and out of your cycle of chronic fatigue and figure out what your life is going to look like once you reach financial independence. But there are tools and workbooks and other processes out there that will help you figure that out.
You know, maybe let me skip ahead to that, because you talked about this chronic fatigue, and you had talked when we were exchanging emails about how you took about a year and a half off after you left the military, and you talked about this decompression process, and it's when you realized what you called the fog of work. And I'm wondering, what would you want listeners to know about that, about this thought of chronic fatigue or the fog of work?
I know what some of you are already thinking already out there listening to this podcast. And yes, I did rip off that fog of work theme from von Clausewitz's book on war, The Fog of War. But it's a perfect metaphor for the military lifestyle, because every day you get up and you race off to go take care of whatever you're doing at the base or at your billet or on a mission or on a deployment. And you'll work on that all day. And by the time the end of the day comes, you're going to catch up on a few things. Even if you're on shore duty or in garrison or you're not deployed, you're still working to catch up, to get ready for the next event, and you really don't have a lot of time in your life other than the minimum cyclic routine. You'll come home, you'll spend some time with your family, you'll work on a few things around the house, maybe you'll collapse and watch TV or read a book. when someone like me comes along and says, you know, you can save for financial independence and you can change the way you live your life and you don't have to work for 20 years and you don't have to retire to a military pension. It's hard to believe that because you're working. You don't really have enough bandwidth to look at this and to change your life routine to go and analyze everything that's involved in reaching financial independence. And the first step toward financial independence, I tell everybody, is tracking your spending. And that's a significant lifestyle change, is making the effort to do that tracking. And so it's hard to sit there and say, you know, this is a different way to live my life, and I'm going to invest the time and the research and the effort to make it happen. So what I tell people to try to do is to try to take a minimum retirement or a practice sabbatical, or to figure out what you would do if you were going to be early retired and financially independent. And I say the best way to do that is to get a couple of weeks of leave from the military, or if you've already started a bridge career, to take as much time off from work as you can, even if it's unpaid leave. You know, a month or two is the best way to do this. And you practice the lifestyle you'd lead if you were financially independent and living your own life and either not showing up for a paycheck job or running your own business, whatever lifestyle you're trying to lead once you're financially independent. And instead of painting the whole house or cleaning out the garage or writing the great American novel or going on a classic family vacation, just try to relax, calm down, catch up on sleep, get over the chronic fatigue, have thoughtful discussions with your spouse and your family about what you would do all day, literally, if you were financially independent and were able to live that retirement lifestyle. That fog of work interferes with all of that thought process and that planning. And I have that on the site and in the book just so that readers understand that this is hard to make the change, and they're aware that the fog of work will interfere with your ability to recognize the opportunity.
Yeah, it is amazing. I'm always surprised by how quickly, and I'm not sure if this is from the military or just personality, but it's so, or maybe it's just human nature, to get so heads down and so fixated and focused on what I'm doing that you lose that sense of overall direction and where you're going and what you want to do, and that the real big strategic decisions in life that make all the difference in where we end up. And, you know, my wife and I have found, we are big advocates of meditation, and we'll do these week-long meditation retreats that are very, very powerful at just recentering and just taking a deep breath to kind of reassess where we're at in life. I'm wondering, what else have you found what have you found that's helpful for people, especially people who are working right now? You talked about taking time away from work. I'm just wondering if there's any other books or resources or activities that you found are helpful for maintaining that perspective in the midst of the chaos that seems to be work life.
Well, the first comment I have is, I can only imagine the reaction of your shipmates and your friends if they came upon you and found you sitting quietly trying to meditate for 15 or 20 minutes, perhaps snoring gently there in the seat. And that's the whole theme, is that it's very difficult to do this when you're in uniform at work and working, you know, maybe a 16, 18, even 20-hour day. And I understand that. The best answer I have for overcoming the fog of work is to take what in our family has become the mantra of 20 minutes a day. Focus on thinking about what you would do differently for 20 minutes a day. And maybe it's as simple as, I'm going to start tracking my spending, and I'm going to spend 20 minutes a day today setting that up, and then I'll spend a few minutes a day from now on making that spending of my tracking of my spending a habit, and I'll keep an eye on that over the next few months. That's the first step that I suggest all the readers take toward financial independence, and so that's the simplest one. Take a couple of weeks off and figure out what your lifestyle will be in financial independence, that's an ideal situation. And admittedly, it's not very practical if you're in the middle of a workup for a deployment, or if you just got back from a deployment, or it's the holidays. But the whole point is that there is another life out there. You can go find it. You can seek it and identify it and create it for yourself. That process of pretending that you are financially independent, early retired, will help you identify what you want to do in that lifestyle. It's the first step in designing that lifestyle. And maybe you're going to be able to do that while you're in uniform. Maybe you'll have to wait until you're on terminal leave from the military. Of course, we all know that when you're on terminal leave, you're working on your LinkedIn profile, your networking, your career search, and a whole bunch of other distractions. So that might be difficult as well. But the point is that you have to do a little bit of something every day, and you can get there. It can be done. I'm the guy who made it happen. And if you follow the advice in a book and on a website and talking with other people who have gone through the same process, you can do it too.
I wanted to talk about both your book, The Military Guide, and the website. I mean, you are a prolific writer and just very active. I'm wondering, though, maybe what started this thought of writing all of this down? Were you a writer on submarines, or did this come about once you exited the military?
Once again, I'm thinking of all those exos who were pretty sure I had no idea what I was writing or how to craft anything while I was in uniform. And I'm sure many of them today are shocked to find out that I've actually published. But when I retired, I did spend a lot of time. Internet forums in 2002 were just moving from the old dial-up modem bulletin board days into a functional forum that you could log into on the internet with some bandwidth and spend some time finding like-minded people and discussing financial independence and early retirement with them. And that's what I spent a lot of time doing in the time after I retired from the military, when I was trying to figure out if I wanted to go back to work or seek out a bridge career or be an entrepreneur. And in the process, one of the places I spent a lot of time on back then is a forum called earlyretirement.org. I'll send you that URL so you can put that in the show notes. And on earlyretirement.org was when we first asked the question, if retiring from the military gives you everything you need for financial independence, where are all the military early retirees? How come there aren't more of us? And as we talked about that, we figured out that there might be a bunch of reasons that people are not actually able or comfortable with or even aware that they can reach financial independence. And that over the months grew into discussions about the military, and we identified another 40 or 50 people that were either in uniform or had been in the military and were veterans, or a couple that were even retired military. And the joke became, well, we should write a book like that other guy's book. And that turned into, wow, I've never written a book. I'd like to try that. And with me, it was literally about 20 minutes a day to create a book outline, to look at what chapters we'd write about, and to draft the chapter. And I crowdsourced this. I had a lot of help from the people on earlyretirement.org who sat there and either provided stories or personal ideas or advice, or they read the chapters and made suggestions, or they did straight out editing and made sure that I was making my spelling and grammar correct. And we spent a leisurely 5 years creating the book, and then started shopping around for a publisher. So this book is based on the advice and the wisdom and the experience of over 50 people on that forum who helped me write it. And that information that came together with that outline gave us the idea for that book. So I, at the time, didn't realize what a writer I was. I was probably casting around looking for a project and trying to figure out what I was going to do with my life. And today, between answering reader questions and writing about other subjects and working on the next book, I realized that this is something I enjoy doing in the long term. I'm going to keep writing as long as I can. My spouse might tell you that the real problem is I just can't shut up. I can't stop. But I'm always going to be writing about something as long as I can. Mm.
I love, too, that you chose to donate the royalties from the book to military charities. And I just get this sense of this belief in abundance. And my wife and I talk a lot about this thought of scarcity and how that impacts creativity and really limits our willingness to try new things. And I love that. I just put myself in your shoes. If I'm like retired and I'm, you know, not having an active income from a paycheck coming in, I would want to maximize every revenue stream. And I admire that you chose to be philanthropic with a lot of this revenue. And I'm wondering what guided that decision to kind of donate those royalties.
Well, thank you. I appreciate the sentiment there. And it I am a nice guy, but it is more practical in a number of ways as well. One way that I persuaded people to help write the book with me, the way I was able to reach so many crowdsourced volunteers, was that I said that when we publish this book, you're not going to be personally enriching me. I'm going to give all the royalties I earn to military charities. And if you help with the book and figure out a way to help me get this book published, then you'll get a vote on what military charities we're going to contribute the royalties to. So we literally took a vote and figured out what charities we're going to donate the royalties to. And that's the model that I'm going to continue to use for every other book I write. I'm just going to keep giving the money to philanthropy, to military charities, or whatever the appropriate cause is. Another reason I do that is I'm financially independent. I want people to realize that that's a credible way to live your life and to not depend on income. And every blogger who does a half decent job of running a website will eventually run into this situation where they're trying to say, I will help you reach your financial goals. And the skeptical reader will look at the website and say, yes, as soon as I give you a bunch of money, I'll help you reach your financial goals. But how do I reach my financial goals? So it seems cynical, but that's frankly what's a lot out there on the internet. And so by giving the money to military charities, I'm showing people that I am financially independent. This is working even without the revenue from the website, without the revenue from the royalties, and you can too. The other couple of reasons behind it, I've been reading a lot about scarcity and abundance, and a lot of the same books probably have been on our reading list. And one of the things that happens when you take an approach of abundance is that you find more opportunities, you find more ways to share. You may be giving it away, but you're also networking and developing more contacts and finding more ways to earn more revenue. And I want to show people that that really does work, and that if you do choose to write a book or start a blog, there are ways to raise your income there. And finally, I just don't want to take money from people who are struggling with their finances and trying to reach financial independence and then tell them that that's enriching me. I want them to buy the book if they want to spend the book and if that has value for them, especially if they want to read it in a Kindle format. But we've also put plenty of copies of the book in base libraries and in public libraries around the world. It's also on the military, the Department of Defense's GSA schedule. So the Command Financial Advisor or the Military Base Family Service Center, all of those places can buy the book and hand them out to service members. I try to make the book available in as many free channels as I can so that people can get in there, figure out what they need to do and get started and then decide if it's worth spending the money for the book. And finally, this is something you've probably discovered and all the other veterans on your podcast have eventually come around to realizing is that this is a way to pay it forward for all the people who helped you during your military career. Maybe you're apologizing to them, but maybe on the other hand, you're saying thank you and paying it forward to the next batch of military service members or to the new generation of people that are going to read your work and benefit from it.
That's awesome. I just think that's really admirable. And I love the, again, the transparency there where, you know, there were ways where making it donation-based was helpful for you. But I still just think it's an incredible it's just an incredible act to do that. And for listeners in the show notes, I'll put links to everything we discuss, especially the military guide, Doug's website, where you can see all the articles he's written, as well as a link to his book where you can purchase that and find that. I'm wondering, Doug, what other resources would you recommend? And I say this for listeners at the Military Guide, even if you go to his website right now, you'll see book recommendations. You'll see a tremendous amount of free information there. But I'm wondering what's top of mind for you right now? For someone listening, what books or websites or podcasts have influenced you in your career that you would encourage them to check out?
It's all there on a website. You don't need any more than that. That's the ultimate list and you're good to go.
Okay.
But the reality is that I'm always finding new talent, right? I'm always looking around and discovering something new. I don't remember how I ran across your podcast and your site, but somebody linked to it probably on one of the forums I was on or on social media. And I'm constantly reading social media, Twitter and Facebook, and I'm getting suggestions from other people that I talk to in email. For people that are seeking financial independence, just strictly looking for financial independence, I'll recommend a couple of sites to you in the show notes that people can go to and see the forums there and see the resources behind those forums. You know, they'll have wikis or their own resource lists. For people who want to write or people that want to work with others and teach financial independence, there's a lot of resources out there for personal finance, and the biggest one I've found is the network of bloggers that I've gotten together with in financial conferences, and the one that I like the most is called FinCon. And FinCon is an annual conference in the fall, and we have it in different cities around America. It's grown dramatically over the last 5 years, and FinCon 17 coming up in October in Dallas, Texas, is estimated to have somewhere between 1,200 and 1,500 people, the biggest gathering we've ever had for a conference of personal finance people. And we call that money nerds getting together to discuss personal finance in real life, like we've been doing the other 362 days on the internet. And I find the contacts I make through there just absolutely fascinating. I meet wonderful people. I learn a lot. And if I wanted to go back to work full time and do some kind of entrepreneurial project, well, that's the way I do it, is I'd start with the contacts I've developed at FinCon. But that's another resource for me as a personal finance writer and as a coach, somebody who's explaining military programs to the service members and the families.
That's great, and I'll add all of those to the show notes. I'm wondering, you know, I just want to acknowledge. I feel like I'm dancing this fine line between realizing the wealth of material on your site and in your books, and just wanting to send all listeners just there, and then also wanting to be able to provide and extract some value here on the show. And so, you know, one thought on that is just kind of like what asking about. What are some of the most common questions that you see people asking? Because I think that might be maybe what's most top of mind for someone who's listening right now is maybe even anticipating what question they have about finance.
Oh, the questions run the whole gamut. The question is, who is your book written for? And the book and a website are all oriented at anybody who's in the military or ever been in the military and their families. So the questions I get are, I just started recruit training, or usually a parent will say, my son or daughter has just started recruit training. They don't have time to talk to you, but I'm here to ask you what they want to do with their money. Somebody will just get commissioned and they'll be out there starting their career as a young officer. And they'll say, hey, I need to figure out this thrift savings plan and start saving some money because I have more money than I ever used to have before in my life and I don't want to waste it. Then I get another group of questions from people who are 4 or 6 or 8 or 10 years into their career, and they are not sure they want to continue, or they want to make sure they understand what their other plans would be if they were told that they had to stop serving in uniform. And I talk to those people about the options for making the transition, not just the transition from active duty to civilian life, but also the benefits of the transition to the reserves, the National Guard. And then the next questions that inevitably follow are how the finances work, how the benefits work. After that, I've got another batch of people who have questions about retirement. And frankly, many of the people that have been serving for 16, 18, 20, even 25 years are very comfortable in uniform, very comfortable with what they're doing. They like the mission, they like the camaraderie, and they're a little terrified about having to make the transition. So again, we work through all the issues there with concrete advice. I do a lot of reading, for example, on LinkedIn. I'm very familiar with what groups there will help veterans leaving the military on LinkedIn figure out how to target what they want to do with their lives, what careers they want to research, what industries or even what companies they want to work on, and then how to network from there to get a job. So I can talk people through that. And it's not just me. It's all the information that I've learned from other readers and other people whose advice that I've been passing on over the years. And finally, there's a batch of questions from the spouses and the families asking about veterans' disability ratings, asking about how the pension works in reality after you've retired, asking about VA compensation. I occasionally get a question about survivor benefit plan from somebody who's divorced and they know that they're going to get a survivor annuity from their ex-spouse. Or I'll get questions from people that say, I got out of the military and I'm not happy and I'm trying to get back in. How can I make it work? So I get a ton of different questions about all aspects of being in the military for all the services. It doesn't have any specific service orientation. And it's all phases of life. And I, again, show people that when you reach financial independence and you're on the other side of the uniform, there's this whole world out there and I'm living it the best I can to set a model for others to emulate on how they want to live their lives, knowing that they've reached that financial independence, that security, and they can start thinking about their legacy.
It's just amazing the diversity of questions and lifestyles, and every it seems like every conceivable background is asking about different things. And so I can imagine how fulfilling that would be to just be constantly learning and using some of your extra time to research the best answers here. And I can also imagine after, you know, maybe what you said 14 years or so of doing this, how you must just develop this wealth of just internal knowledge, being able to be able to help so many different people with so many different problems that might seem unique, but over a 14-year period are not as unique as they might think.
Oh, yeah. And part of the issue is I'm finally reading all those references and all those manuals that I should have read when I was in uniform, right? I mean, I read a lot of reactor plant manuals during my day, but I didn't spend much time with the military personnel manual or the joint travel regulations or the financial management regulations for retirees. And there's a whole lot of stuff buried in there and even buried in federal law that most people don't appreciate when you're in uniform and probably don't need to appreciate in uniform as long as nothing goes wrong. Mm. But when something doesn't go right, that's when I start getting the questions and have to start looking up the answers. So I've learned a lot from that.
Mm. Do you have, I wonder if you have, you know, one way I thought of kind of segmenting people on active duty is those who are transitioning under 10 years and those transitioning after 10 years. And that might not even be the right way to segment this, but I'm curious what advice you'd have for someone listening who might be on active duty and might be transitioning, you know, before that 10-year point.
Oh, and 10 years is a pretty good place where people have figured out whether they enjoy what they're doing. Some people, you know, when they join the military, they know they're going to do 4 or 6 or 8 years and they're never going to look back. They're going to completely leave the military and move on with their lives. But the person that's at the 10-year point can see that the finish line is 10 years away and they want to know whether they should stick around for it. Why not just keep doing your job for another 10 years and you'll have that pension and you'll be set for life. And I'm not that guy. My advice to somebody who's at 10 years or 2 years or 14 years is to take it one obligation at a time. If you are challenged and fulfilled by active duty, then keep doing it. When the fun stops, though, have a plan to leave active duty for the reserves or the National Guard if you can, if that works for you, or to completely leave active duty and go find a civilian bridge career to complete reaching financial independence. If you have an aggressive savings rate, and by aggressive, I mean if you're saving at least 40% of your gross income, if you've been doing that for a few years in the military, as much as you can, then by the time you're ready to make that transition, you'll have plenty of money for the job search fund. You'll have plenty of money to take time off from work if you don't want to find a job right away or if that job you're looking for isn't there. You'll have plenty of time to attend school and a GI Bill if that works for you. Whatever point you leave the military, the whole point of the book and the blog and the resources is that when you get to that point where the fun stops, that you have the courage to leave active duty and go for the reserves or the National Guard or total civilian career. And I've seen people leave the military just short of 18 years, leave active duty just short of 18 years of service to go to the reserves because that was the right thing for them to do at that point in their career. And I've seen other people who they describe their lives to me. They tell me what they're doing in uniform and they say they enjoy it. And to those people, I say, well, great. If you can do that for 30 or even 40 years, keep doing it. And there are some people who have no reason to ever retire, even if they reach financial independence. By that, I mean people that have a job where they have a lot of complexity and fulfillment, maybe some autonomy. People like professors at universities or doctors or lawyers. You can design a lifestyle that lets you do what you enjoy doing with some of your own lifestyle in there and your own hours and your own terms. Well, that's great. You'll never, ever have to retire. So for that person who's looking around after 8 or 10 years of active duty, not sure what to do, the answer is, well, pretend that you're going to get out of the military and think about how you would make the transition and think about what you would do next. And the mechanics of that, of course, involve getting on LinkedIn and looking at the resources on LinkedIn or talking with other people who have gotten out of the military and made the transition. Podcasts like yours are very helpful. If I had had podcasts like this when I was in uniform, I would have been listening to them on the commute home every night and on the way into work every morning, and I would have been much better educated about how to figure out how to get out of active duty and what I wanted to do next. So those resources, it gives you a plan, a bridge, a way to think about what you're going to do if you don't have the ability to keep having fun and challenge and fulfillment on active duty.
And thank you. I mean, I appreciate those kind words too. And you know, one thing that stands out when you're saying this, I love this sense of pursuing one's passion. And you had talked earlier about how, you know, now that you're retired, you see opportunity everywhere. And I do love this sense of viewing the world as full of opportunities and viewing it as there's so many different ways to make money and to make a living. And so really being deliberate about finding one that's going to be really exciting for you. And if that is active duty, go all in, continue doing it. And if it's not, know that there's 1,000 careers out there that might light you up and really give you that passion. But knowing that it's definitely out there and just being patient enough to find what's going to really energize and excite you.
I've heard for years, what will you do after you get out of the Navy? And the answer is, whatever you want to do. Well, now we have a toolbox, and here's how to use the tools. Mm.
And I'm wondering, you know, on the other side of that, for people who are past that 10-year point and maybe closer to the 20-year point, do you have any advice for them financially?
Again, keep saving. The longer you can save, as much as you can save, the faster you'll reach financial independence. Now, if you're going to save at least 40% of your income and put it in the thrift savings plan and your IRA and put even more in taxable accounts, if you invest aggressively in a high asset allocation to equities, to stocks, to funds with passive management, index funds with low expense ratios, if you do that with your 40% savings rate, you'll reach financial independence in less than 20 years. It might be as little as 16 or 17 years, depending on how your investments in the stock market cooperate. But the idea is that if you're going to stick around in the military for 20 years and you've been saving 40% of your pay or higher for that entire time, then you're going to be a lot closer to financial independence. You might even reach it without the pension. Of course, everybody's life, everybody's path is different. If you're greater than 10 years of service and you wake up one morning and you realize the fun has stopped, the best time to start saving for financial independence would have been with your first paycheck. But the second best time to start saving for financial independence is today. Start tracking your spending, figure out what you're wasting your money on, what spending that you're doing that has no value to you. And the process of tracking your spending will help you with that. After a couple of months of tracking your spending, you'll look back on what you put your money at. And you'll say, well, I'm wasting my money here. I'm wasting my money there. It'll be very clear what you're wasting your money on. And so you stop doing that. And after a while, you'll start paying off your debts. You'll start saving up your emergency fund. You'll start maximizing your thrift savings plan and your IRA contributions. And you'll start saving even more in taxable accounts. And maybe if you're a service member who's got more than 10 years of active duty and you started straightening out your financial life at that point, maybe you're even saving up for the transition funds that you have the resources to leave active duty, to transfer to the reserves and National Guard, to start your bridge career, whatever you want to do next. Again, the money, the savings, the investments give you the financial freedom to have more options and to make more choices.
That's great. Well, I always like to leave the last segment just to open it up for anything I didn't ask about that you would like to share with members of the Beyond the Uniform audience. I'd love to hear any other advice you have or thoughts you'd want to share.
Well, I don't have any more advice other than what's in a book, because the goal of the book there is reaching financial independence. But the biggest fear that everyone has when they're facing that transition, especially when they're financial independent and they're getting ready to just retire and not work, the biggest fear is, what am I going to do all day? And I'm here to tell you that 6 months after you stop working for a paycheck, 6 months after you retire and start living your life the way you want to live your life, you look back on that and you'll say, I don't know what I was worried about. And even more, I don't know where I ever found the time to go to work. You'll wake up in the morning, you'll have a list of things you want to work on that day, including surfing, of course. And by the time you go to bed at night, you'll realize that you got maybe a third, maybe a half a list done, and you've got all these things you still want to do with your life. That's been pretty much the last 14 years for me.
That's so awesome. Well, for listeners, I'll have links to all the resources we talked about, but definitely go to themilitaryguide.com. I just signed up for their newsletter. It's something that obviously would benefit every veteran, and the book as well. You know, Doug, it's so easy to plug your book because it's not even like you're throwing this out for personal gain. All of this money goes to charity, and so, you know, it's definitely something I'm going to check out and would encourage listeners to check out as well. So, Doug, thank you for your time on this. Thank you for your being a role model and just being very honest and upfront. And just also all the work you do giving back to the military community and helping other people find their way to their passion and to their financial freedom.
Thanks, Justin. And again, I'm happy to answer emails or questions from readers, whoever wants to learn more about this. Also, next time you're out here on Oahu, drop on by. Let me know when you're going to be here. We'll go down to White Plains Beach. We'll take out a couple of longboards, paddle out, and go surfing.
That's awesome.
Surface.
Thanks for listening. Three important notes before you go. First, Audible.com is offering a free audiobook for Beyond the Uniform listeners. I love Audible. I get 3 books a month, and it's a great way to use net, or no extra time, to polish off books while you run, drive, etc. If you go to beyonduniform.io/books, you'll not only find this offer, but you'll also find a list of every single book that has been recommended on this show. One in particular I'd recommend is The Hard Thing About Hard Things. This is a great story of determination and also a glimpse at what startups are really like. That's at beyonduniform.io/books. Second, there are so many great resources out there for veterans, it can be difficult to know all about them. That's why at beyonduniform.io/directory, you'll find a list of every single resource that's been mentioned on the show or that I've been able to find. You can also add your own if you find one I've missed. Lastly, I've put together several different free ebooks that provide data for veterans about their civilian career possibilities. This quantitative information serves as a great complement to the qualitative interviews I do each week. Go to beyondtheuniform.io, click on resources, and you'll be all set. Have a great week, and I'll be back next week with more interviews with military veterans about their civilian career.